This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Outside your window may not be great, but here on Post-Show Recaps, everything is on fire. I am one of your hosts, Jason Reed. My other host with me is Sasha Joseph. Sasha, how are you?
I'm here. I'm definitely on fire because this episode is when I was like, oh yeah, all hope for humanity is done.
The world is on fire.
Yeah, the world's on fire. And it felt way too real, Jason. I was not having it. Did not appreciate how I was like, right, even a damn Power won't help.
We are here to cover the show, The Power, Season 1. We are on Episode 6. We're a little more than halfway done. We got some movement on plot a little bit. How did you feel overall about the episode, Sasha?
Yeah, I enjoyed this one, I think, better. I feel like, okay, this is a show I signed up for, if that makes sense, where it is a little bit focusing on the power, right, per se, and we're actually getting to know how that's impacting and how is it menace? Like the opposite of feminist, whatever those weird, the Andrew Tates of the world. Right. I can't believe I actually used that name.
Chauvinist, you know, male toxic masculinity.
Beta males.
Yeah, exactly. Beta males who think they're alpha males.
Correct.
It feels like a tea kettle that's like building up. And I think this might be a show that is building to a climax that might, the show might think is getting a second season. Let me say that. Cause I feel
I like that. Yes.
We're almost to the end. I feel like it's not going to hit its breaking point until like the last episode.
Yes.
And I hope that the show is correct in its thinking that it's going to get a season two. I feel like it's not going to break fully until season two, because we're not getting like the movement I thought we would get on like a climactic event. We're still building up on a lot of characters.
Yeah, agreed on that. And I also think that, or rather, I wonder if it's going to end with the Senate election and we don't get the answer.
Oh, that would be horrible. That would be terrible.
I will literally fight.
I hope we don't leave on a big cliffhanger like that. I just think that they're banking on a second season for most of its big, bigger moments, dealing with like what happens fully when when something breaks between men and these women that have powers worldwide, because it's really, like I said, building. We saw what happened in Saudi Arabia, but it's something that they're going to happen on more of a world stage.
Yes. Oh, this is fascinating. So I looked up Power Season 2, and it does say that it currently has a 76% on Rotten Tomatoes, which I will say I'm very shocked for, you know, what kind of a show this is. But it's saying one of the most thrilling series in recent times, which I do believe for Amazon Prime, this is true. But the critical consensus hasn't been overwhelming. So we don't know. If it is going to be renewed, I think, again, the plot points, like teenage girls, right, like stuff like that, just doesn't move in the same way, unfortunately.
I feel like it would turn off a lot of people. Interestingly, so I'm a little surprised about the 76%. I'm glad it's getting some recognition that it deserves. It's a good show. It really is. And I just feel like it would turn off some people that are like, oh, it's too politics heavy. Like, I'm sick of hearing about women, blah blah blah. And I feel like the sci-fi element may turn off some people as well. So I am hoping it gets a season two. I enjoy the show. I'm just hoping to get more climactic events. I want to see that revolution take place. I feel like they're saving a lot for a prospective season two.
Yeah, agreed. Because I think if we were moving to a resolution by episode 10, then this is not it. Like, you can't pack everything into one. And this, again, similar to what happened with She-Hulk, where we were like, okay, but when is the big bad gonna come? Okay, when is this gonna happen? And it wasn't moving.
Yeah, I mean, like She-Hulk, we felt like they were filler episodes. Where just yes, like, there should be more stuff happening. Like, what is the end result? And yep. we saw what the end result was, which had mixed reviews and mixed results. I wouldn't even necessarily say. When I say it's, I wouldn't say these episodes are filler. Things are happening. Their plot's moving. I just feel like I wish we were moving at a faster pace.
Exactly. It's just slower. That's it.
Yes. It's a slow burn for sure.
Yeah.
So this episode, we got about three different. If I wrap up the whole Cleary family in one, I'll say we got three different plot points. We got a Margot Joss Robb plot. We got a Toon Day plot. We got a Roxy plot. Our big focus started with Margot. Joss and Robb get the big part of this episode. So we'll just start with them, and then we'll just go through the Toon Day and Roxy storylines.
Yeah.
After that, kind of wrap those up. So we start the episode. We are getting another speech from Urban Docs talking about, you know, why the powers are happening. It says men have gotten soft, and you know, they forgot how to be strong and protect their homes and women. So women had to protect themselves. And they let women have the power, but they can reclaim their rightful place, their real power. Not a magic trick or not sparkle fingers. Girls are not bulletproof. We men have real weapons and we know how to use them. Now, this is like, this rhetoric is like not even trying to hide anything, right? This is just like, violence to you know, close the gap, to close the difference between the power that you as men have and women who now have this power. This was even more, I think, inflammatory than what we see in the real world.
Yes, agreed. And I think this is the first time where I think it's so blatant, right? Like in Saudi Arabia, it was very much in episode 4, right? Where we were just like, yeah, this is a thing. We're just going to outlaw it, you know, or people are going to get fired for it. But this was very much in your face that the almost equality or equity even wasn't working for the folks in power and for these, like, honestly, beta males, where they just felt so threatened instead of, you know, embracing that, like, women now feel safer. How beautiful is that? They're not coming for you. They just don't want to put up with your BS anymore. That's all.
Yeah, and a big focus on this episode was like how scared men are now. There seems to be the women are having more power than them. When even, you know, I think Toon Day puts it great in his segment about how women feel about the power and how it really equalizes the two sexes. We see that someone is listening to Urban Docs while standing on the beach outside of Margot and Rob's house. Yeah. And he's literally like peering into the window and looking at Margot. She's going about her day. So it's just like very ominous and very, very, very foreshadowy for those that have seen the ending of the episode. So Margot is inside the house. She's looking at her phone. It is dead, but just her holding it in her hands is starting to recharge the phone. She's like, oh, that's pretty neat. Rob comes in. He's like sheepishly like knocking on the door. He's like, hey, I just want to get some pants. You can tell there's still like a lot of frosty sentiment between them. They're still fighting from last episode. Margot says, you know, you can come back into the room if you want to. He's like, okay, that's great. He's like, you know, they sit down, talk a little bit. He talks about how, you know, he talked to his lawyer. He could get in trouble if Declan reveals his name, but he's pretty faithful that Declan won't give him up. Margot's not so sure. She doesn't trust Declan. She thinks that you know, he may spill the beans if he has to.
Bleeze the sleaze, man. Let's see. Yeah. That has stuck with me for life.
Yeah, let's see what I mean. But I feel like Declan is so far as we've seen a pretty stand-up guy. So who knows?
Let's see. I trust no one.
Yeah, then the conversation turns and Margot says, well, I mean, are you going to apologize for jeopardizing my career and even your career? He says, well, you know, you used to be someone that cared about doing the right thing. That's what I was doing, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, and she says, well, you used to be someone I could trust. So the lines are still drawn here in this battle, and they haven't really gotten over all the things that are bothering them about each other.
Yes. And I'm interested to see what happens. Here's my like crazy hot take. So, because we don't really hear from Rob and Margot, right, as much after these scenes. Like we get sprinkles, but here's my big declaration. Do we believe that Rob might go to Herb Talks? I'm stressed.
No, thank God. I don't think
I'm scared for it because, you know, just the resentment in his face. Or maybe it's sadness, and I pray rather.
I think it's sadness. Okay. I think it's sadness, and I think it's worry. I think he wants to take up for the cause, but maybe he's not. He doesn't want to put his skin in the game because he talks to Declan later about, like, you know, he didn't think that his family would get involved in like this. So I think he's scared for his family.
Okay.
I don't think he's resentful. I think he believes in the message, but he doesn't want to put his family in the line of fire for it. I think that's what Rob's thing is.
Right, because I didn't want to believe it, but I was scared. That's what I am.
Yeah, I think Rob's definitely going to blur the line, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, but most of his concern is about his family and his children, his wife getting hurt. At this point. Unless something drastic happens, I think Rob's going to stay on the side of good, pretty much. If anyone's going to go, like, to a different side, I think Margot might go to, like, a more power-hungry side.
Mm-hmm.
If anyone in this relationship is going to change, their way of thinking the most, I think Margot may be that person.
I do believe we're setting up Jason for a Margot versus Allie.
Yes, I think that would be interesting. I think if we got like a Margot, Allie, Tatiana comes in the mix.
Oh,
like,
yes.
You know, that would be interesting, like, battle to happen.
Tatiana's taking over, right?
Oh, yes, for sure.
Right. Okay, cool.
We're waiting for that moment.
Yeah, exactly.
And it will really show, like, just because we're women doesn't mean we have the same perspective, that we have the same thoughts about this power. I think that's going to be a really interesting way to view the power philosophically, and who thinks of what and how they should use the power. I think that'll be an interesting thing that's going to be hopefully explored later in the season.
Yeah,
that's the thing I talk about, where it's like, I feel like that's going to be a season two thing, because none of these people have met each other. And if it happens by episode 10, that I feel like that'd be really quick, because the pace the story is going so far.
Yeah. Okay. I got you on that. Yeah.
So Margot goes to pick what shoes she's going to wear for the day, for her important day. And she picks combat boots instead of heels, which, you know, I think is a real turn for her character in a way. She's like, F it. I don't care who wants me to wear heels. I'm going to wear these boots to show I'm in charge. And she gets to, like, the office, and Helen notices that she's, like, wearing boots. And she's like, listen, we're not going to talk about my footwear anymore. Like, I'm through with that. Like, that's a policy now. We're not going to talk about it.
Yes, stand-up queen. Yes. I love that scene. Finally. Yes.
Helen says, where have you gotten all this new energy and attitude from? And Helen surmises that Margot has gotten the power. And Margot tells her, you know, it's amazing. I feel this new energy. And, you know, I have a new get out of my effing way attitude when I'm walking the streets. Margot offers to give Helen the power, but Helen says, listen, I've had a target on my back since birth. I don't need anything else to make people look sideways. I mean, I was like, ooh, go off, Helen, who was born a black woman who, like she says, has enough things going against her biologically. She doesn't need anything more to add to the pile.
And here's the thing. I just want to note, right? Like, we should never, and we will never, we as in Jason and I will never, but also we all, the royal we, should never blame or place, you know, any frustration on marginalized people that have to do whatever to get through life. Like, that, you know, should just be the norm, I feel. Because sometimes I think folks, because I can see, right, how people be like, Helen, like, be a good ally, da da da. And it's like, no, because we have not lived in Helen's body, right? And, like, her body is the most traumatized, the most politicized in this country, period. So, you know, I wanted to note that, like, for any minority, but, you know, black women specifically in this instance also, is that, like, we just cannot blame them for, like, getting through the world, like, however they can safely.
Yeah, there's so many perspectives that are shown in this show, which makes the show so interesting to me, where it's like, like you said, hell, people like, Helen, like, step up and gain your pressure. Like, no. We should not, like, you know, charge people for not wanting to get into the battle, not wanting to get into the fray, as it were. Because, like Helen said, she got enough going against her. She doesn't want something else to be taken, to be looked at as something that is against humanity or whatever. People are already scared of her because she's black. And, you know, people already look down on her because she's a woman. So it's just like, she doesn't want anything else to really add on to that.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
So Helen tells, you know, Margot, the conversation goes to, like, well, no one's going to, like, look bad on you for having the power. And Helen says, no, I don't think so. And she references, like, apparently a woman got, like, fired from a morning show just because they have the power. Margot's like, that is ridiculous. We're going to find a way to match this. So they get in.
When?
So it's time. It's
time.
We are back in the office. Helen's at her office at her desk. Helen brings in a bunch of mail, puts it on the desk. Says, "This is all hate mail." We find that someone even sent in a bunch of dog poop in one of the boxes of the mail.
It's that guy. It's the redhead from the beach. Because that's probably a dog poop bag we saw.
Oh yeah, I did not even piece that together.
He had her number from start of this episode.
Yeah, he was foreshadowing what he was going to do the whole time.
Also, that's really scary to me that he knows. Here's what I thought. I thought it was going to be here's the American in me. I'll say I thought it was going to be a shooting in the house. Because I thought he was just going to walk in. Yeah,
so did I. Yeah, I was definitely looking out for that like the whole time, because you know that's tough to know, to have your, to be the face of this and have people know where you live. I think I would have just like moved somewhere else.
Yeah,
it sucks that you have to do that because of idiots, but I mean, let's keep your family safe, like, you know, I have to.
Correct.
She's got Secret Service, but we saw that it didn't really do much for her at the end of the episode.
I'm also watching The Night Agent, which is a lot about the Secret Service. So that's why I'm like, you suck, because Night Agent Secret Service is very on point.
Night Agent would have been in there in a heartbeat.
Listen, that's all I'm saying.
Someone comes to the office and says, you know, hey, they are testing everyone in the office for EOD. Margo says, well, they can't do that because it's illegal. And then friggin' doo-doo head Danden steps in. So actually, we can, because I declared EOD a public health emergency about 5 minutes ago. So we are legally allowed to test for it. Margo tells him.
Let's fight. Me and this man.
Yeah, Danden like kind of brushes it away, says, well, I'm doing this to try to keep everyone safe. Margo says, well, who decides on what and who is safe? And this is immoral. And whatever list they come up with people with EOD, they're going to use that to determine who to fire. Danden says, relax. You know, it's the whole thing. Like, ooh, calm down, relax.
Listen, I don't know if this is a thing for you and your wife. And actually, yeah, in your family, not just your wife, where you say calm down and then it's a whole fight.
Oh, I've learned not to do that.
Exactly. I was like, this is a big thing that my husband had to learn, where I was like, excuse me, what'd you say?
Yeah, very early in our relationship, I learned not to do that.
It's like, calm down for who?
Yeah. Danden, you know, tells her, you know, hey, you all are free to decline the test, but whoever does is going to be put on leave without pay. So I think that's interesting, you know, interesting thing. I mean, you're making them choose basically freedom or pay.
Yeah.
You know, it's a hard situation to put people in. And I don't even think that's a TV show thing. That's a real world thing that happens at times. Yeah. Force people to do things or lose their job, basically. Margo and Helen meet up in the bathroom. And, you know, Margo just says, I'm just going to go in there and tell them I have it. And Helen says, no, you don't want to do that. You still want to be elected. And this might cause, you know, you to not be elected. Dan is only doing this because he's threatened by you. And he's using this to take you down because he thinks that you have it already. Helen talks about how they are testing. It's a newer machine, and it sends an electrical pulse through the body. And it makes the skin have a discharge. So basically, if you have it, you're just going to make you shoot electricity. Helen says, you know, we can beat the machine. There's some pain management techniques and deep breathing you can try. And, you know, Margo says, like, listen, between childbirth and childhood trauma, I think I can do it because I've been through enough and I've gotten through it. So I think I can do this.
What a queen.
Yes, for sure. Margo enters the testing room. The person administering the test, who is a female, is giving her the whole rundown. And we see Danden watching from the next room through a two-way glass. So Margo, you know, can't really see who's in the next room, but as we're going to find out, she knows.
He's sick.
He's watching. He's a sicko.
He's sick. Like, actually a gross, disgusting person.
Mm-hmm. Margo asks the woman giving the test how she can stand to do this. And the woman basically just ignores her and keeps giving her the test. So the testing is going on. She's basically sending electrical pulses through Margo's body. And Margo is taking it like a champ. She's not letting it show. She's doing her exercises, her techniques, you know. And she passes the test. She says, oh, you don't have it. You're fine. And Danden obviously is pissed off. We see him like through the glass. He's obviously bummed that she doesn't have it. So Margo gets up, and before she leaves, she goes to the two-way mirror and says, I'll see you in the primaries, knowing that Danden's back there. So
that was BD. You know what I mean? That's big ovary energy. Because please. But that was so good, Jason. That like injected into my veins.
And it's like this like morning, right? This whole morning was basically what kind of like spurred her to be like, you know what? I am going to run for Senate. I am going to beat his ass. I'm going to take him out.
She's like, you want to play? Let's
do it. Margo is so like charged up, and she obviously has had to like kind of keep her power in through this test. So she has to get out of the building. She sits outside, sits on a bench. She's so shaken from this. She's like letting her electricity out. And the way that, you know, I don't know if you call it like body acting or whatever you would call it.
Ooh, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Toni Collette like did so well in this scene of like letting this like show and how like torturous this was for her. And she lets it out on this bench she's sitting on. It kind of like makes cracks in the bench. And it was very interesting scene to see.
Very powerful. And I wonder, you know, just as women, I feel like there is some part of us that definitely can access. I mean, and not just women. I think any minority has that, like, in us to access that, like, anger and or rather even frustration. I don't even want to call it anger because it's a product of not being able to be free, truly, in these systems.
Well, it's like keeping your feel. It's a, in a way a parallel to, like, keeping the injustices you suffer.
Yes.
Like, to yourself.
In your body, literally.
In your body. Yeah. And like letting it out at times where you can let it out. Like if you go home and you can let out all the crap that happened to you,
yes.
All the injustice that happened to you, like out on like your family or whoever you talk to at the end of the day. So that was like a real parallel to that, I felt. That was a very interesting scene. And, you know, this isn't just letting it out verbally. This is letting it out physically in a way.
Yeah, agreed.
We shoot back over to Rob. Rob is talking to Declan. He's complaining about the Scarlet Minnow name. Declan says, well, I was just trying to help you cover your tracks and, you know, kind of taking the piss at the same time. Declan assures Rob that he's never running about his name. And we find out that Declan is going to Carpathia. Like, that hits us because we know who is in Carpathia.
Yes.
Tatiana and Zoya are in Carpathia. So Declan may be meeting up with them at some point.
So could we, like, here again, I feel like a hypothesis moment. Why is Rob, right, the Scarlet Minnow, like, out in public with this man in the daylight?
Because people could piece together. Because we know Declan didn't keep his name a secret when he put out all this stuff, as we will see later with Tunde looking at who released the information. So, yeah, that is a good point. You know, people can piece two and two together and see that, you know, Rob is connected to Margo, who is connected to, you know, the government, maybe knowing about these, you know, experiments that have been placed on the scheme. So
yeah,
people can definitely put two and two together if they see that. And especially since they make a big scene in a bit. That's an interesting point. Declan does talk about Margo and Rob. Says, oh, Margo's still pissed off. Rob says, you know, she's all about the politics now. He's fine dealing with powerful women, but he did not sign up for the death threats that he and his family have been getting. Declan assures him it's gonna pass. Rob says he's not sure. The world is changing, and Margo seems to be changing with it.
Listen, and this is where I think in my heart I was like, "What's up, Rob? Yeah. Like, is Urbidox happening?" Because right, this is the same bar I believe that we saw at the start. Right, the opening was all these men kind of being radicalized, or something in them kind of being woken about like being inferior now to women. So this bar scene I feel like was fascinating because the guy tries to like this random guy tries to you know, buck up to the
female bartender.
Yeah, bartender. Yeah. Yeah. And she's like, listen, don't play with me. I said you're drunk. I'm cutting you off. And she starts with the electricity. Mm-hmm. And he has a
taser.
A taser with him. So this is just an interesting piece because I thought he was going to shoot her.
Yeah, I mean, this is the first of two times in this episode where somebody goes to reach for something. I thought it was a gun. But no, yeah, he just had a taser. He threatens her. He literally says he's bigger than her. He's stronger than her. He can zap her right back.
Yeah, like, okay, Jaden Smith, bigger than me, stronger than me. His arms are a little bit.
Oh, no. Justin Bieber and Jaden
Smith.
Oh, my gosh. Didn't think I'd be referencing that today.
How did that come? Wow, good for my brain.
Sometimes. Yeah, good pull on that one. Rob and Declan do intervene with the guy, throws the guy out as he's yelling, they're throwing like, you're not at the top. We are still at the top. Urbidox knows. It's like, wow, this is really getting out of hand, crazy.
Yes.
And just to like go back on the Rob piece, I think it's interesting where Rob is, like I said, he's down for the cause. But when something hits the road, when rubber meets the road,
oh yeah,
is he going to be down for the cause? Because it's good to say that you're down for the cause, but are you going to put up or shut up when it comes to it? I don't think Rob wants to do that, so it's going to be interesting to see how far he will go or what he will do to to either be there for the cause, or will he realize he ain't as much for the cause as he thought he was.
Yeah. Okay, I'm 100% with you on that. Mm-hmm. Let's see, because this is where I could either argue that Rob was like, I got too caught up in this, but I'm back with Margot because like I'm seeing what actually the real world is doing, to the to women, right, specifically. So that's when I maybe could give him a little bit of
give him some grace,
but he is dealing with a lot, and I want to make that clear. Like I want to root for him, so I'll go with it.
Yeah. We can make that our bet for the season. I think Rob will come out on the good side. You may be going a little more on the darker side. We'll see. Mm-hmm. We'll keep track of that through the season. We touch in on Joss. We see what Joss is up to. Joss and Ricky are making out in a car, doing what some teenagers do. They're getting a little intimate. Ryan is, Ryan's a little scared as she's giving him little shocks on his body as they're making out. And he tries to get her to stop. He yells to stop several times, and she does not stop. And so he tries to get her off of him, and he accidentally hits her in the mouth. And that scares Joss. Joss takes off. He tries to call after her, but she runs away. So Joss is back at home, and Ricky has shown up. He apologizes. Joss apologizes back as well. She says, "I know that this EOD can be scary, and it fritzes in me at the time." Ricky says, I didn't freak out because you have the power. I freaked out for a whole different reason. And I think one of the most interesting moments of this show, of any show really, of today comes up. Ricky tells her that he is intersex, meaning he was born with both sets of genitals. Mm-hmm. Is his name Ricky or Ryan? I'm sorry.
Ryan, I think it's
Ryan. Okay, his name is Ryan.
It's fine.
Ryan tells her about being intersex, which... it's a segment of the community that does not get touched on a lot. So yes. it was really surprised. Well, I guess I shouldn't have been surprised due to the nature of this show, but I was a little, because it's not something that is in the mainstream, unfortunately, in television.
Yeah. And here's another piece where I think we're inching towards what counts as female.
Yeah. We're learning more rules. In the show.
Because this goes back to our conversation about trans women, or will this be almost a heartbreaking moment where it's estrogen, right? Is what's gonna take us where it needs to be, or will it,
Yeah, and it makes us think more of Sister Maria, mm-hmm. in Allie's storyline, where we debated whether or not she was going to get it or not. I think this really leans more towards she's not going to get it, which, I think we both said we really wanted her to get it, because that would be a powerful moment.
But
unfortunately, I think the rules of this show may prevent Sister Maria from getting it.
Yeah, let's see. Oh, that would be really sad, because Ryan's nice too, and I will say hitting someone is not okay ever, period. And
well, I mean, he didn't consent, mean to hit.
Yeah, that's what I was gonna say, and consent is important too, and I think he was withdrawing consent.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that it was also important to note, where maybe I think we can see how people were like, well, how dare he touch her, and it's like, it's wrong, and withdrawing consent is okay.
Right. I mean, as much as it goes for women, it goes for men as well. So it's Joss in that moment was in the wrong. It's like, I like the fact that we have characters that aren't all just heroes.
Yes.
They have flaws. Yes. And this was definitely a flaw with Joss. Maybe mm-hmm. she got caught up in the moment, but it was wrong. Flat out.
Yeah. Oof, Ryan. Yeah, I'm just Ryan's thing is just so fascinating to me, and his privilege as perceived. No, he says he's a guy, right? So yeah, he identifies
as a man. Yeah.
Yeah. So his privilege as being a man gives mm-hmm. him so much, and I was like, no, we already said I don't want men to get it, and now look.
Yeah, they touch upon this a little bit, where so Ryan tells Joss about he has the power now. He shows her he has a scheme, mm-hmm. and that he can, he can display the power because, as he says, he has high levels of estrogen. And so he shows off the power, and he tells her that he's had it since she accidentally zapped him through the locker. So that was enough for him to activate his scheme, apparently.
Joss is Oprah. You get a power. You get a power.
She's giving out powers all over the place. So Joss says, you've had it ever since they were taking girls out of the classrooms and putting them in like isolation and you were hiding it the whole time. Mm-hmm. And while me and my mom and all the girls had to risk our lives. And Ryan says, well, you know, it would be bad for people to find out that I have it as a male. They would look at me with even more scrutiny if they knew I had it.
And it's like, my guy, please.
Josh says, well, you could have told just me. Ryan says, well, I'm telling you now, and it's my body, and I don't owe you an explanation. I was like, oh, okay. All right, Ryan. I'm down for it. I'm here for Ryan. And again, it's like, okay, Josh has had to learn lessons this episode. This is another lesson. Like, listen, I have bodily autonomy, and I choose who gets to know about my body and when.
And because we want that for the girls too, right? Yes. It's so we just keep the same energy. And I understand her frustration, but her frustration should be again with the system, not with each. Like we shouldn't fight each other for what the system is doing to us. And I will say Ryan did stand up for her. And he did try to say like, hey, don't take them. This is wrong.
Right.
So, you know, listen, and he has privilege, and I think he knows that. I don't think it's lost on him. So, you know, my body, my choice.
Ryan was as scared as a lot of the girls in the show that we have seen. So it's not even something that he should have, you know, it's not up to him to take up for the cause and be like, listen, because I do think he would have gotten looked at with a lot of scrutiny and be like,
oh, 100%.
It's first of all, letting people know that he's intersex.
Yes.
And seeing that he is, you know, he'll be looked at as a man that has the power and will be looked at like, you know, as like a circus freak show in a way. Mm-hmm. So I think that's, you know, it's well within his rights to tell people when he has it and when he wants to tell people he has it.
Yes.
All for Ryan. Hey, Ryan has turned a corner for me at this show. I was like, Ryan's kind of a punk kid before. I was like, oh, Ryan is much more complex than we thought.
Yeah, and he's aware of, I think, more things than we expect teenage boys to be aware of.
He's not just a dumb teenage kid. He has complex thoughts and feelings.
Compared to the damn brother, right? Mm-hmm. Like, Maddie. they're so interesting. Like, polar opposites, I feel.
Yes, for sure. We get to a scene where the whole family's eating dinner together, which apparently in that household, like I think a lot of households nowadays, is very weird because they don't usually eat around the dining room table. Do you and your husband eat at the dining room table?
No, yeah. We don't. Like a TV.
Yes, it's all about TV. And same with me and my family. We all eat in the living room, on the coffee table, watching TV.
Same. Yep. Yes.
So Margot asks Rob about his day, which, you know, is a big thing because that was what Rob was complaining about before. And Rob was actually kind of surprised. Like, oh, it was pretty great. Thanks for asking. Margot asks Josh. She says it's okay. And Maddie breaks the awkwardness. Says, are you guys getting divorced or what? They say, no, of course not. Why would you ask that? He's like, well, we're eating around the dinner table, which we have not done in a long time. Margot says, no, I just wanted to get us all together, all the distraction, and kind of make an announcement. And she tells her family that she's going to run for the Senate. Joss and Rob congratulate her, but Maddie is really bugged by it. Maddie says he isn't going to vote for her. And I like the little kid. I think her name's Hannah, pointing out,
yes. Well,
you can't vote anyway. You're just 15. So I was like, oh, get him, Hannah. Get him.
Oh, the little one? Yeah. Yeah.
Margot
says, Izzy?
I don't know. They don't give her. They don't name her.
Izzy sounds right.
Yes.
But I could be completely wrong.
I think you are right. I'm thinking back. I think you're right.
Yeah, I'm looking in my notes. I can't see it. It is what it is. The little one.
Sounds right. The little one. We'll call her the little one from now on. She's not going to get that much.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
We pray that she grows up in a more equitable world. That's
she probably has the most sense in that family.
So yes.
Well, let's give her her due.
Here.
Her name's Izzy. No let's lies. Give her her due.
Yeah.
So, you know, Marco says, well, I do want to know why you say you wouldn't vote for me. And Maddie goes on a spiel. And Maddie talks about, you know, male voices don't matter anymore. And women need to know their place. I'm like, oh.
I wouldn't even know what I did, Jason, if my child said this.
I mean, there'd be a backhand somewhere, right?
Right, or something. I think the internet would be cut off.
Women need to know. Internet cut off. He would have a mattress and clothes to go about his days.
Like, women need to
know their place.
The chutzpah to like put your lips together to say stuff like this. I don't understand.
Yeah, he says, things are backward now. Even in this house, he points out that, you know, Rob does all the cooking and Margot emasculates him. And Margot says, well, that's because Rob likes to cook and he's good at it. And Rob's like, yeah, we play toward each other's strengths. And it's like, you know, it's V relatable because that happens a lot in my house. Like my wife and I share a lot of the duties.
Yeah, same.
Now, I mean, I am forced to take out the trash. You will not touch the trash, but that's more of a personal preference than a gender thing, I think, for me and my wife.
Yeah, I'm like that with dishes. I will not touch. I don't like to do the dishes, so my husband does. And yeah, same with trash. I'm just lazy and don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, it's definitely more, that's more of a stance, I think, in modern day. But we have people that, like an urban docs, who think that there are female jobs and male jobs, and this has obviously infected Maddie, which also goes to show, like, sometimes it's not about nurture, it's about nature. It's like, you know, Maddie has grown up in this house where he sees the duties get split up not by gender but by, like, personal preference. But it's these outside forces that are kind of infecting Maddie's head and making him think certain ways.
And I think teenagers, period, doesn't matter their gender, are so susceptible to, like, whatever, right, is, like, in or cool or whatever, you know, or even anti-establishment, right? Like, that's what's in, and that's always been in since the beginning of time. It's just so unfortunate that boys are specifically growing up with, like, feeling like, oh, because I don't have, you know, this, like, overpowering space in my life, in my house, whatever, that equals I'm threatened. And that means that I'm lower. And it's like, hello, wake up. Women have been lower and, again, perceived which becomes their, you know, reality, right, for a lot of families and in the world, just like how systems work. So you're just mad that you're maybe finally getting a taste of your own medicine and you don't like that. And instead of wanting to help remedy all of this, it's like, no, 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 I just got to take my power back. And that's so, like, gross and unfortunate.
For sure. And, you know, it's, as I mentioned last episode, I have a teenager. So a lot of this is hitting home for me a lot as I go through my everyday life with my teenager. So it's be relatable, like I said. And so Margo's like, where are you getting all this stuff from? Like, that urban docs idiot. And, you know, Josh is like, yeah, what are you even thinking? Calls Maddie a moron. So Maddie runs out of the room. He's so upset. And, you know, Rob says he's going to go talk to him. And we didn't get that scene where Rob goes talk to him. I thought that would be an interesting scene to see. But I guess since we already kind of saw that talk, like, last episode, maybe they didn't think it was important to kind of hear the same beats.
And I don't think, Rob is getting through to him. I think they have to get, like, an outside person that Matt respects. And then maybe somehow.
Yeah, it's hard to undo that horrible, like, institutionalized thing. That is a tough one. Who knows how Maddie's story is gonna wind up.
God, I feel sad.
And I unfortunately think it might be something that, you know, unfortunately, the only thing that would shake him out of this is to see it hurt a person close to him, I think.
Yeah.
Which would suck, because we like all the characters that are there. So who knows? But Joss, you know, after all this, Joss asks Margo, so you want to go outside, which is code for you want to go outside and smoke pot. Margo says, yeah, sure. Just one more time. So they go out into the little dock. Joss says, you know, well, you have my vote, for what it's worth. We need someone to fight for us. Margo lets Joss know about the EOD test she took and, you know, tells Joss that she has not told Rob yet that she has EOD. She doesn't want to tell him because she knows that he is sometimes in a position where he has to talk to media and she does not want him to lie for her. Margo tells Joss, sometimes you have to lie to the people you love to protect them. And talks about how, you know, the EOD makes an imperative that she wins the Senate because she does not know what Dan is going to do if he remains in the Senate.
And it's just, I'm stressed.
Yeah, it's just the things you have to do to not just obtain equality, but to
keep that's just the beautifully put, chef's kiss.
I mean, because she knows that Dan is going to abuse his power if he still keeps it.
Look at this man already. He's wild.
Yeah, she has to put herself in the position to do what's right, which sucks that not everyone wants to do what's right for everyone. So we get to the announcement for Margo. She's giving a speech talking about how separate is not equal. And she knows as a mom and a human, they're at their best when they're unified. And she is tired of fighting the same battles for her daughters and for other women that women have had to fight for years. And the power is evolution and an opportunity for society to be more equitable. and she then officially announces that she is running for Senate. The guy that we saw earlier, watching her, you know, through the window from the beach, we see him in the crowd, and obviously we're all just like, oh my gosh, this is not good. What's going to happen? And as we see him standing up, we hear more of Urban Dox's nonsense, you know, in narration. He starts walking towards Margo. And I will say this. Before the episode started, we did have a trigger warning for suicide. And, you know, just it's coming up. It's here.
Mm-hmm.
And for anyone that's struggling with thoughts of suicide or anything like that, you can call 988 or text 988 to get help. That's here in the U.S. For any, you know, other international version, I'm sure you can easily look up online.
Yeah.
So we'll say that before we get into this. So the guy walks up, and I'm sure everyone thought that he was getting ready to grab a gun out of his jacket. But he grabs a water bottle instead. We're like, oh, okay, what's this gonna be?
I thought it was acid.
Interesting. I didn't get that. I was just perplexed. I was like, oh, what's gonna happen now?
Yeah, I think I don't know if this is an Indian thing, where this is unfortunately a really big thing in India, where men throw acid on women's faces. And yeah, you know, it could be, yeah, it's very much a power play. It could be like, you turn me down, you're how dare you? Like, I'm a good guy. So here, you know, for many reasons, but all, you know, ingrained, or the umbrella is patriarchy and commodifying women's bodies and their like time. So that's where my mind went. And I was like, oh, acid in America. And I was like, wait, does it work in a plastic bottle?
Interesting. Yeah, he pours the bottle, whatever's in the bottle, on himself.
Yeah.
Like, okay, he lights a match, like, oh, that wasn't water. That was lighter fluid.
And Secret Service has been nowhere this whole
time. Like, well, he's watching. He's like, what's going to happen here? I'm like, dude, get into action. Like, Margo spots a person who's like, hey, bro, you want to get over? And he's just like, nah, I'm just going to see how this plays out. I don't know why he wasn't closer to Margo. Like,
right. Or there should be like more people, right? Like almost like one on each perimeter. And yeah, two people close.
Yeah, this is
the
one guy we've been seeing the whole time. Like, even before all this, the EOD stuff. We think she have a much better detail, but whatever.
Especially with all the death threats.
Of course, yeah, for sure. And so, you know, the man pours the stuff on him that is apparently lighter fluid, lights a match, and sets himself on fire in front of everyone there. Very, like, terrifying scene. I was like, oh my God, like, this is crazy. And I mean, as we mentioned, there was that trigger warning in the beginning of the episode. This was the last scene of the episode. So we kind of knew what would happen.
Yeah.
In a way, it's kind of a spoiler alert. A needed spoiler alert, of course. But, you know, I knew something like that was going to happen. But it was rough to see.
Yeah, and I don't know about you, Jason, but this is like one of the first times where I had to be like, maybe I do need to Google the Power episode 6 ending explained, because you know, I'm like, how dumb are you that you're lighting yourself on fire?
Yeah, what's the message?
The reason? Yeah. Right? Like, cause it makes absolutely no sense. Like, because this is gonna sound harsh, but if folks like this, right, that are so radicalized, just want to go...
Do it more, bro. Do it more.
Yeah, right? I was like, just like, go be, you know, on a cult somewhere far, far away, you know, in the middle of the ocean. I don't care. Fine. Go.
We're not going to be upset, my guy.
Yeah. Like, you're just like helping our cause, not yours.
And I mean, I suppose the message is like, I would rather kill my, like, be unalive rather than to live in this world that the females are taking over. But yeah, if you feel that way, like, more power to you, unfortunately. Knock yourself out.
Yeah.
So that was Margo, Josh, Rob, their stories for this episode. They, like I said earlier, they got the bulk of the story here in this episode. Mm-hmm. We did have Roxy and Tunde that we touched upon. Roxy, we start Roxy's story. She is at Terry's gravesite, saying that, you know, she's so sorry for what happened to him. We see Bernie, he's praying in Hebrew.
Yeah, he's saying the Mourner's Kaddish, which again, this stuff doesn't need to be included, but it just feels nice to see, because I immediately knew what he was saying and what he was praying. So you say that, you know, when someone has died, and I found it fascinating that they're not sitting Shiva, which is like you sit for 7 days, you know, what once I think you bury the body, unless I'm totally off. So, but instead, you know, Bernie is like out here in the streets.
Yeah.
Yeah. So just it felt interesting that he's saying the Moner's Kaddish, which is, you know, what you say when someone passes away. But then he's not like maybe sitting and you just have to sit at home, like you can't leave. So it was really just in it. Yeah. And it's, this is what I like find fascinating about Judaism is like you get 7 days where everyone has to send you food and you don't move, you know, you're just like in the house. And then 30 days, there's another like grieving period, and then a year. And then it's almost like giving you like, here's, you know, how checkpoints of grief, basically.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. And then 1 year, I think, is when you actually have the tombstone put on. Oh. And that almost like wraps up your grieving.
Okay. Grieving period. Done. Move on.
Yeah. Like basically, yeah, it's like, you know, and that is, it's okay to move on kind of, okay, or like not move on, but move forward. Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. The more, you know, like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I was like, you should try it. You know, monk family.
Yeah. Roxy's still the great side. She's talking to her other brother. Now, I was mistaken because I thought that Terry was her like twin, not twin.
Me too. Okay,
the,
same.
The brother, yep, that was born at the same time, but apparently it's this guy Darren that was born the same time as her. So Darren's sitting with her. He's like, you know, sorry about your mom, sorry about Terry, sorry about everything. And Darren says, you know, he can't do this anymore. Once he gets through university, he's getting out of this life. He's getting out of the life of his dad. He's getting out of the kind of like the mob life. Roxy says, well, you were too posh for this anyway. You never really fit in. Then Darren goes and he says, so what was it like killing that guy that killed your mom? She says, felt really good. Like she really, really liked it. So next up, we get Roxy coming into her dad's house. She runs into Barb, who, for those that don't remember, is Bernie's wife. So Barb kind of attacks her in a way. She says, you know, this is all your fault. She blames Roxy for Terry's death. Barb says she doesn't want anything to do with her power because Roxy offers to give Barb the power. So I don't want anything to do with you or your power. She blames her for Terry's death. Bernie comes in, tries to calm Barb down, and then says, Roxy, come with me. We are going out. He takes her to a jewelry store, brings her to the back. And, you know, as we were getting there, I was like, oh, this is, he's going to try to make her do something to this guy. Because they meet up with a guy and it's apparently some type of deal that's going down. But the guy only gives Bernie half the money he owes him. So Bernie says, oh, that's okay. He brings him in close and he puts him in a headlock and tells Roxy to shock him. Roxy freezes and says she doesn't want to. Bernie lets the guy go. And Bernie's really upset that Roxy froze up. They go outside. And Roxy, she says, you know, I know that I messed up, but Terry isn't dead because of me. Terry went into this knowing what he was getting into. And he's the one that pulled the gun first, so it's not my fault. Bernie is fed up. He says, do not push me. They yell back and forth. And she goes, or what? Like, yelling back and forth. This is interesting. Really, like, Roxy's story was really short this episode.
Yeah. I wonder what the setup is, right? Like, what was the reason for just giving us this much? Like, is it that later on she's just going to burst? And that's why they needed to kind of get the aftermath out of the way.
I do think it's interesting for Roxy, who previously had said she wanted to be part of this life. But when presented the opportunity, she refused to do it. And I'm also wondering if it was that or it's just because she doesn't want to be seen as some, like, I don't know, weapon for her father. She wants to be in charge. She doesn't want to be seen as she doesn't want to be an enforcer. She wants to be like in charge of something.
Yeah, I wonder if, yes, and I think an additional layer for that, I wonder, is that she has now killed someone, and maybe she didn't like it.
Maybe, yeah.
And maybe that's why she's
maybe really she doesn't have that bloodlust that she thought she would have.
Exactly.
So that is interesting. I wish we could have gotten a little more perspective from Roxy herself in some kind of way with what she was feeling in that moment, because I'm kind of left wondering after that really what her true feelings were there.
Agreed. And her brother did Darren, right? Yeah, Darren did ask her, right, what did it feel like to kill someone? But again, she wasn't as like enthusiastic as we saw her before.
Yeah, she's been hiding her true feelings when she told him it was great. Really, she didn't love it.
Yeah.
So I'm interested to see where Roxy's story is gonna go, because this was just a small little sampling.
Yeah.
Moving on to Tunde's story. Tunde is back in Nigeria. which I was happy to see, because I was interested to know like where his relationships are right now, especially with Duty, because he tries to call Duty and she gets her voicemail. He says he really hopes to see her at a wedding. He is there for a wedding. We find out he's in the wedding, apparently a groomsman or something.
Looks so like all of it. I was like, yes,
so lavish, so wonderful. Yeah. So Tunde's there. He's walking kind of through, I guess, through the, is it a village or the city, getting to the wedding.
Oh yeah, I see what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he hears gunshots. When he thinks he hears gunshots, he turns around, see that there's nothing there. The gunshots aren't real. So obviously we've got some PTSD going on from his time in Saudi Arabia. So that's very interesting to see. And you know, in this whole show that's, you know, primarily about women, I think it's interesting that Tunde is getting this time, and he's gonna seemingly get more story for himself rather than just being like the eyes of what the outside world sees as the power.
And we're realizing that we need these allies, right? If if women are to be like being able to just live, honestly, then we need men like Tunde. Yeah,
we need men to step up.
Appreciate that.
We need men to step up and talk to other men about that this isn't like, this isn't the end of the world. Like as Tunde will kind of be throughout this episode. Tunde's brother finds him, comes to grab, says, "Hey, we have a problem," and we come to the groom Wale, who does not want to marry his wife because apparently his wife got the power transferred to her. Wally says he can't be the man in this marriage if his wife can shock him. That it's going to be, he's going to be emasculated. Tunde says, "Well, I've seen what the power is, and it's not a reason to dump your future wife. This is a good thing. It's something that's going to bring equality more than harm." Wally says, "Well, it's not equal if only one of us can shoot electricity from our hands." And he says, "I mean, who said men and women are equal?" This is Wally, the groom talking. Tunde says, "Well." Tunde says, "Well, look at the size of you. Like, one blow from you would kill your wife." Wale says, I wouldn't do that, though." Tunde asks, "Well, has she shocked you?" "Oh, got him.
And he didn't like that because that like was that. The last we heard from Wale.
Yeah, Wale disappears after that.
But apparently, he said, "I don't want reality."
Yeah, don't talk sense to me right now. Wale says he does remember Tunde being Mr. Women's Rights before EOD, and Tunde's brother says, "Well, that's because he feels guilty over Duty being shocked in the face, because that was kind of his fault."
He said, "I've been in the trenches now."
Tunde has gotten the real world presented to him, and that has changed his outlook for sure.
Correct.
The loud pop of a champagne bottle kind of sets Tunde off. This is more of the PTSD coming through, and he like kind of freaks out at this moment. So yeah, that's going to be an interesting story to parse through down the road. We're at the wedding. Right before the wedding, I assume. Everyone's walking about, getting drinks. Tunde's walking around, checking the comments on this story, and this is the article that Declan wrote about the scheme. Yeah. So this is where Tunde realizes who Declan is, and I also realize like Declan was not anonymous here. Like Declan put his name on this, like, and put it out there like that. Tunde gets approached by a couple women hitting on him. Tunde approaches and kind of scares them away. She teases Tunde a little bit, saying, "Oh, are you famous now? You missed a big shot."
Mr. Verified, which I thought was a funny joke. Yeah,
especially right now, right?
Exactly. Where people
are getting quote unquote unverified on Twitter.
Oh my god, it's so timely without even meaning to be.
Right, it's so interesting, and like, which is kind of the show, right? Like,
it's
weird timing. So she hugs him, and so it, you know, we were thinking like, what is the relationship going to be between Tunde and Duty here? And certainly it seems like Duty, you know, bygones have been bygones. She talks to him about, "Well, you have everything you ever wanted." He says, "Well, not everything." It's like, "Oh, okay." So they go off and have a talk. Duty says she isn't surprised that Wale is freaking out because he's a pretty insecure guy with all his muscles, but he doesn't really, he fears women. Duty asks him how Riyadh was. Tunde says it was really hard. And he talks about the freedom and the sisterhood that EOD has brought about. And says he wishes Duty would have come with him.
Yeah.
Duty says, "I have work to do here. I'm working with a coalition and, you know, about trying to come together as women in Nigeria and to really kind of strengthen ourselves and build a true matriarchy and get rid of the corruption that men bring about."
Yes, the matriarchy. Again, Duty, music Queen. To my ears, baby. Let's move. I'm ready.
We've met so many interesting women in Tunde's story. We have Duty, and I'm blanking on the name, but the Was it Noura?
Oh, Noura. Yeah. Yeah. I think Noura, it was from, Noura, right? Yeah, yeah. In Saudi Arabia. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of interesting women here that have come into Tunde's life.
All with N. Start.
Yeah. Interesting. Tunde tells her that he's missed her a lot. Dude, he says, well, I don't want your pity. I want something else from you. It's like, what? We see what that something else is. They sneak away to the honeymoon suite and they have sex, which was really interesting.
And it was shot. You can tell, right? Like, women shot this because just, again, mm-hmm. it's not like, like, it's very, it's just nice.
It's not the male gaze. It's not, yes. you know, focusing on certain aspects of women's bodies. It's kind of the both sides of it.
Yeah, yeah. And it just, it felt nice.
It's passionate.
And exactly. I was like, yeah, I'm in it. Like Bridgerton, right? This is why, mm-hmm. when one of the reasons why Bridgerton works really well is that it isn't just this male pleasure. Also, I, because I was looking at the power hashtag and the actress, Heather, I'm going to butcher her last name, but Agayapong. Maybe that's how you say it. But Heather, she posted that the director actually asked her to, you know, before she came on set, to like have the most like sensual, passionate music and like have her, she said, dance for an hour, then come on set. Yeah, oh, she said like go dance and like, you know, like play the music that's going to make you feel like, you know, beautiful and sexy and all of this, and then come to set. So I felt like this duty like did feel different, but I don't know if it's because I knew that info, but she felt more confident, right? In the way she was moving, and
she for sure did. Like duty in the, you know, what we saw her at the beginning was kind of like,
right.
kind of bookish, kind of nerdish. I mean, of course she's glowed up here because she's attending a wedding,
right.
But she definitely seemed more confident, more like ready to go after what she wanted, because it's like you felt like in the beginning of the 10-day duty relationship that she definitely was crushing on him, but she was too nervous to say it. And from what we got, it seemed like they had hooked up before, but Tunde had kind of put a stop to it, and she was obviously wanting to continue. And here she is literally just going after what she wants. She is interrupting him as women are hitting on him, like scaring them away. Like she is definitely a different duty than what we saw earlier, which is great.
So I just I appreciated that tidbit. I was like, yes, more of this.
Yeah, and it worked for sure. And as they are, you know, going through the motions of it, he asks her if, you know, she has it. She says, what do you think? And she shows him a little bit where she has some shocks on his body. You know, after everything's all done in the pillow talk, she tells him that he should make a book of his travels. Tunde says, well, would you come with me on my travels? She says she has work to do there in Nigeria. Now, I was like, Tunde, she already told you that she has work to do there. Why do you keep trying to get her to come with you?
And my girl's not trying to be like a sidekick.
No,
you know, I love it.
Trying to like be the secondary character in your story. Yes. She's trying to be main character. Duty has main character energy now.
Also, when I had looked up the synopsis of the book, it is written by, like, there's a double story, right? Where it's a story written by a man.
In the
that's book's following. Canon. Yeah. Book's canon. So I'm wondering if that's going to be Tunde.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. And again, we have not read the book. So maybe in the book too, it was Tunde and I'm just not remembering correctly. Yeah. But either way, I felt like that was an interesting piece. That will it follow Tunde?
I mean, in a way, he is writing the story, you know, by reporting on it.
Right.
In a way.
That's, so true,
that's interesting.
Too. Mm-hmm.
You know, I was reading a little bit about the author of the book, and she actually wrote the book in response to Gamergate, because she was a woman in gaming, and she suffered, you know, because as for those that don't know, as Gamergate is kind of like a gatekeeping of men from women in video games. As women were getting more into the video game industry, they were being gatekept by men in the industry already. So she wrote The Power kind of in response to that, because of the injustice that she suffered at the time through Gamergate. So I thought that was a very interesting piece to put it. And it shows that, like, throughout history, there have been things that, you know, where women felt injustices, like not just of today, where we're definitely feeling it today, but it's, you could feel it at any time throughout history.
Yeah, agreed. So it's fascinating. Yeah, and it is. Okay. And I looked it up. It was the book within a book, right?
Yeah.
So the manuscript was submitted by someone else, and it's supposed to be Neil Adam Armone to another author named Naomi. Mm-hmm. But this was supposed to be like 5,000 years after The Power has emerged and the revolution happened. So I wonder if that's going to be Tunde, even though Tunde mm-hmm. is still in this book as well. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm definitely, that'll be cool to see. So yeah, then they get a call. They are both expected to be at the wedding and they're not there. So they rush out to go to the wedding. Yeah, that pretty much wraps up the episode. You know, like I said, anxious to see more, anxious to get this kind of jump started and see more. I feel like we got a slow burn. I want to move a little faster.
Yes, agreed. Which again, if we knew, right, the season two was confirmed, mm-hmm. I think it'd be a different story. But since we don't know, and especially with Amazon Prime, things are weird. So yeah. Let's see.
Or if we had 14 episodes instead of 10, or 12 instead of 10, I feel like we're moving at a good pace. But now we only have 4 episodes left, and I want to get to a good spot. And it looks like next week we're going to check back in on Allie. Yes. And Tunde is going to interact with Zoya and Tatiana. Mm-hmm. And Declan also is going to be there, apparently, meeting with Tunde. So that's going to be interesting. But it seems like we're going to get just going to move a little more, probably not a whole lot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm interested to see what is to come. Sasha, do you want to tell everybody what you're up to, where they can find you, all that good stuff?
Yes, as always, I'll be over on Rama's website /messmagnets covering pop culture, drama, everything fun with Kirsten McKennis. And I started a new podcast with Rob called Below Deck Sailing Yacht, or that's what we're covering. But, you know, it's kind of big deck energy over on the Bravo Wrap Ups feed. So check that out. And I was a guest on 90 Day Fiance with Puya. And I was on Big Brother, etc. Netflix, all of that. So just follow me on Twitter @funsize_04 to just keep track of everything I'm doing. And what about you, Jason?
You can find me just about every week over on A Perfect Match, the podcast where we talk about the show Married at First Sight with my co-host Asia Welch. Check us out over there. We have a lot of fun. Coming up, I do have a project in the works. I will be covering The Citadel with Marissa Garza. We were talking about that show that premieres on the 28th. So check us out as that comes out. This week, I will be on Nothing But Netflix. It'll be my turn to be on Nothing But Netflix.
Yes.
As we talk about a childhood passion of mine, the 30th anniversary Power Rangers special. So I'll be talking about that over on Nothing But Netflix this week. Check me out there. You can also find me on Twitter @JAYR. Until next week, we'll see you all later.